This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Hello and welcome to Duck Snort Baseball Podcast. I'm Greg Nix.
I'm Waylon McQueen.
And we are here with an off-season edition of the Duck Snort Baseball Podcast.
It's December.
It's December. Teams are wheeling and dealing.
Yeah.
We got moves to talk about. Before we get into that, let's give a shout out to Boardwalk Audio for their help distributing and producing the podcast. You can support Boardwalk and Duck Snort by visiting ducksnortpodcast.com. Click the support our artist link. That will take you to Amazon. Shop like you normally would. Boardwalk and Duck Snort get a small percentage. Also, big ups to the offthebenchbaseball.com team for their distribution help. Definitely check them out. They got lots of goodies over the whole off-season coverage of all these various trades that we're about to talk about. So definitely support them. Let's talk about, I think, trades are the place to start.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong. Last off-season, the first trade wasn't until mid-March. Right?
I think you were correct. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so the Mariners' decision to blow it up has drastically condensed the trade market, I guess.
Yeah.
But they will eventually run out of players to trade, I'm assuming.
Seager's left, right? That's the next one?
Seager and Haniger, yeah, potentially, if they want to move Haniger.
Haniger feels young.
Yeah,
to move, right? Are they?
I mean, it depends
like
how all in on the. Well,
yeah.
They've pretty much blown it up. So they've traded Robinson Cano, Edwin Diaz, James Paxton, John Segura, amongst others. There have been some smaller moves in there. Alex Colome to the White Sox.
Oh, yeah.
So it seems like they're pretty much like going all in on a rebuild, which is kind of interesting since they won 89 games in 2018, although they did overperform their run differential. It was a good team. It was a pretty good team that they then decided, you know what, we're not going to catch the Astros and the A's.
But they were like, they're right? Like, they're not going to be as good as the Astros the next three seasons. Like,
sure, that is safe to say. The A's, maybe they could be as
well. Yeah, you never know.
I guess the like question is sort of, you know, and it's the question that like I think teams and fans and reporters are generally asking more of late is like, is there value to being a team that is pretty good as opposed to a 100 win team, right?
Yeah, I think it. I mean, it's a great question. First, I guess let's start here. I want to start here. Do you think that this is a good move for the Mariners before we talk about it? That's what I want to know.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If you're a Mariners fan, I think it's always good in these kind of situations to say, if I'm a Mariners fan, am I happy or am I upset?
I think I'd be disappointed probably, but you know, it's simultaneously like when the White Sox did this, they were stuck in the middle for quite a while prior to that, and I was very ready for it because it was clear to me that that team was never going to achieve anything. Like, they couldn't even get close to the playoffs, you know.
Right.
But that team topped out at like 76 wins.
Yeah, 89
wins is a lot. And the Mariners haven't been to the playoffs in so long. It felt worth it to me to push the chips in for 2019 instead of just kind of cash out, especially because there are not very many good teams. There are no competition for the second wild card apart from the A's. American League.
Or maybe the Rays,
I guess.
But, or I guess maybe the Angels if they're clicking on all cylinders. But I see what you're saying, but to me, that is saying like were playing to make the playoffs, they have no chance against the Astros and the Red Sox in a series.
Yeah, right? It's true. Like, so that brings it back to my question of, right, like, is there value in being a pretty good team?
I think there is value in it being a pretty good team, but not that Mariner. I think it's like team by team.
You look at what the Brewers did, and the Brewers were in a much different spot than the last offseason than the Mariners are this offseason, in that they had more young talent, but, you know, they added to that talent in the free agent pool and got a game away from the World Series,
yeah,
right? So, like, no, the team as constituted would not have a chance against the Astros or the Red Sox or the Yankees.
I see what you're saying.
But that team plus Patrick Corbin or plus AJ Pollock or something would have a much better chance. You know, like, they're only maybe one or two moves away from being a solid favorite for one of the wild card slots. So
I still think I see what you're saying, but I think, because the Brewers also benefited from being in the NL, where there wasn't a true powerhouse team at all,
right,
like in the NL. I still think the Brewers.
But you wouldn't have said that before 2018.
Well,
you would have
said
the
Dodgers
and the Cubs.
And maybe the Cubs, yeah. But
so, like,
I don't
anything
think I
can
felt,
happen.
I don't think I felt maybe the Dodgers, but I don't feel like the Cubs were as powerhouse as how we are seeing the Astros and Red Sox, and maybe they're close to how we feel that the Yankees are coming out of this season. I mean, the Yankees got way better already, too. I guess what I'm saying is that if I'm a Mariners fan, I see what you're saying, but at the same time, if the alternative is blowing it up and then in 2021 not just being like a wild card team, but being the Astros, like if I'm a Mariners fan, like, the playoffs would be nice, but that's not enough. I would rather just, like, we saw an 89 win team not even make the playoffs. I just want to be the Astros. I want to be the team that everyone's scared of for five seasons.
Right. Of course, every fan base wants that, but there's like also this question of how many teams can be the Astros, even beyond, like,
yeah,
the Astros needed a lot to go right. They needed a very smart front office, and, like, all of these things hit.
Sure,
they were,
yeah,
also the only team trying to do that in the American League.
That's
at
true.
The time.
That's a good point.
Now there's a half dozen teams trying to do that. There's only, yeah, so many good players to go around. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Like, the White Sox and the Tigers and the Royals and the Mariners and the Blue Jays, and, like, not,
yeah,
all of those teams are going to be the Astros.
No, you're right.
So, like, and or, like, if you do want to follow that Astros template, you probably want to try to do it in a way that, like, you're not competing against those teams for amateur talent or minor league talent,
yeah,
right? Like, maybe you want to kick the can down the road another year, because all those teams that just started their rebuild will
be
further along.
Further along, yeah. I see what you're saying. I mean, like, I think getting rid of Cano is a no-brainer kind of anyway. Like, I know Cano added value to that 89-win team, but, like, it seems like the reactions I was reading is that no Mariners fan was mourning the loss of Cano.
Yeah.
So, like, that,
sure,
move, like, kind of made, like, yeah, like, sell while this, he's never going to be higher. I mean, he's been higher in his life, but this, he's going down. Right. Like
Cano, performance wise?
No. Yeah. Trade value wise, I don't feel like Cano, from this point forward, will ever be higher than he is now.
Yeah, probably. I mean, presumably, if he has a bounce back year and doesn't get suspended for steroids, maybe, like, his value is slightly higher.
But I don't think that that's a terrible choice. I don't think, if I'm looking at the Mariners, I think that Cano is on, is playing a significant role in the World Series winning Mariners team.
Sure.
Regardless of everything else. But then when you're sending Diaz and Paxton and Segura and probably Seager packing and Haniger, man, that's the whole squad.
Zunino also.
Yeah.
It's
like, it feels weird because those guys feel young, and they are young, except for
young-ish.
Cano.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Paxton is over 30, actually.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, Diaz is young. Segura is like
youngish.
Prime.
Yeah.
I mean, like the weird thing is, I can't help but compare it to the White Sox situation, and the White Sox. It felt like the other reason it felt like a smart decision for them is because the value on their roster was so concentrated in like these three pieces that they were trading away, right?
Yeah.
That like the teardown was like very apparent. It was like once Sale, Quintana, and Eaton are gone, like there's nothing left.
Yeah.
And those three pieces can all fetch like an elite return. With the Mariners, like they're getting decent return.
They
on
don't
stuff.
Have Chris Sale.
They don't have, exactly.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Their value is spread out around like seven or eight, like slightly above
okay.
average players, which is yeah. why, again, I say like if they could push in on a player like a Yasmani Grandal or a Patrick Corbin even or Keuchel, where you're like, we can be reasonably certain that the like this person is going to be worth four or five wins in 2019. And that maybe is enough to like get us in the playoff picture.
Yeah.
I guess like my big like bump with it all, which is just like, it feels like conventional wisdom to take that team and like sell off those parts, like, because like, oh, we're pretty good, but not good enough. Right. Like that has gone from like a radical idea to a very conventional idea, which is fine, but like,
but then you
kind
can...
of as a front office, you want to be the ones like innovating and finding the next thing to do, which is what it feels like the Brewers did. Like the Brewers
or
never...
the Rays,
yeah, or the Rays. Like neither of those teams have had like a huge sell off of their
yeah.
most valuable pieces.
Yeah.
They've like found ways to sell those pieces, maybe that like are the value is like peaking, but it's not inordinately going to crater their team, you know, and they found ways
yeah,
to
no,
get like
I mean,
undervalued pieces.
Yeah, so maybe that is it. It just feels like an old school, even though it would have felt cutting edge 5 years ago, probably.
Right.
But it does start to feel old school, but only because, the Brewers and the Rays, I feel like, and the Rays in a different way than the Brewers, but I feel like we loved what they did last year and they had a really good team.
Yeah.
And it's different than they've done in the past. So I think if you're comparing it to that, yeah, it does feel maybe a little silly. But I'm also thinking about the Royals teams that had this slightly... It's probably safe to say that those World Series winning Royals teams are pretty close talent-wise to these Mariners teams, if you don't count the rentals of Cueto and Zobrist, right? Maybe a little better?
Yeah, sure.
Like Kane, I guess, maybe is a little better than anybody, but no, they didn't have any pitchers as good as Paxton. They had that amazing bullpen.
Yeah.
But it's like the feeling for the Royals was always like, as soon as 2016 started to look like we weren't going to make the playoffs, it was like, get rid of everybody. Like that was the Royals vibe. So like looking at it from
but
that
they
point,
didn't do it.
Which everyone thinks they should, like that now it's now the Royals are this pitiful mess of a team,
right?
Like, so I think looking from that person, so if you're looking from the White Sox, where this seems like different, this to me feels like what everyone was begging the Royals to do. Just say you have a mediocre team on paper, you got insanely lucky to have made it to two World Series. Even now everyone's like, how did that happen other than the bullpen part? So I guess from that point of view, where I would, for 2.5 years, I was asking a team in my mind to just get rid of Hosmer and Moose high. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I'm not saying it would have worked out from the Royals. Who knows? And I totally get what you're saying, especially now that we've seen the Brewers and Rays do it. But I guess I can see the one difference is the Mariners definitely have more money than the Royals. So the Royals weren't in a position to go out and add any of the Dallas Keuchel,
yeah,
the version of that in 2016. It just, part of me can see it, because I guess if I'm a Mariners fan, I'm like, literally what we've been doing since 2001 isn't working. Let's try this, you know? Like,
yeah, sure. I mean, I get it. It's just a little bit disappointing, I think.
Oh,
and
yeah,
like,
I definitely think that.
I just, like I said, it doesn't seem smart to me necessarily. It doesn't seem dumb. It just seems like it doesn't seem inarguably better than trying again.
No,
in 2019.
I agree with that. That I don't think it's necessarily definitely the best strategy, but I think if I'm a Mariners fan, I'm not.
I mean,
that pissed about. It could be worse. I guess.
At least there's a plan.
Yeah,
and you can follow the plan. But I think they're not getting elite talent. They're getting sort of like good talent, and good talent doesn't always pan out. Like even in the back half of those like top 100 lists, like those guys have a pretty high flame out rate. Yeah. So it's like there's no guarantee that the pieces that they got back are going to help make a better Mariners team than it is right now.
That is the thing, is that they might just be trading a 2019 86 win team for a 2022.
Right. Yeah. Which is built into the risk, I'm sure, in like whatever decision-making process there was, but like, even, you know, Diaz was probably their best trade chip, and the guys that they got back for Diaz are like, might be good, but like there's no Michael Kopech in there even, you know, there's no like super high end prospect. And the other like real, like kind of cynical part of me is like wonders, okay, did this front office, which I like generally, like I like Jerry DePoto and I like sort of the way that he fiddled on the margins and helped build that Mariners team. But did they see a reality in which the Mariners, you know, they try again in 2019, they still don't make the playoffs, then ownership wants to rebuild and bring in a new front office? Versus we are the ones who start
the
rebuild, then
us.
We have like three more years to
Dang.
Build this team.
I don't know. That sounds...
Doesn't that sound like a very realistic possibility?
It really does, because there's no way if they win 84 games next year, which was probably likely, that DePoto's sticking around if the organization decides it's rebuild time. There's just no way. I mean, he might stick around for the first year, but no, they would probably get someone who starts the whole rebuild their way. Yeah.
Right.
That's a good call.
So, I don't know.
I don't think he's like, I think it is selfish and I see what you're saying and that's kind of shitty, but like at least the plan to save himself doesn't objectively, definitely, long-term hurt the organization.
No.
Like, so at least he's saying, I'm trying to keep my job, and I think I can do it in a way that will make the Mariners good.
Yeah.
That he could be wrong, and he could have just bought himself 3 years. But
yeah,
that's a good point. Wow, I never thought about that.
So, I don't know. We'll see. I guess it was just surprising to me that they wanted to tear it all down.
Oh, it was definitely surprising, yeah.
Surprising and, like, a bit disappointing, but
I want the Mariners to win so bad that it sucks to think that like now we just like definitely won't
they're
see
in it
win
for another for 4 years. And like I being a fan of like a rebuilding team, I'll tell you right now that it is not fun.
No, I know.
Like it's like nice that there's a plan and there's stuff to get excited about, but like the last 2 years have been tough to
mid-August
watch.
Gets real crazy. Yeah.
Mid-May gets crazy.
That's true,
man.
Yeah.
Hey, hey, hey. So it's not rebuilding teams. Let's talk about the Mets. The Mets side of this, they got Cano and Diaz. It, as big as Cano's contract is, it's like money neutral for the first couple of years in the exchange they made with Jay Bruce and Anthony Swarzak.
Right.
Plus the money that the Mariners are sending over, which is kind of interesting because it seems like, oh, the Wilpons are spending, but they're not spending right now.
Yeah.
You know, the Mets, I think Cano will still be pretty good the next couple of years.
Yeah.
And as will Diaz, although relievers are pretty up and down. He was great in 2018, pretty good in 2017. But I think in general, you know, kind of a head scratcher just in terms of like the Mets hired this agent as their GM.
Oh, so weird.
They like want to be aggressive. Oh my gosh. Watching Monday Night Football right now, and did you say it's Mark Sanchez who's the
Mark Sanchez
TV now? And just made a dunker. Awful throw.
Yeah, a dunker.
I lost my train of thought. Yeah, that throw
you were
was
talking
so bad.
About.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
the,
Brody
the
Van Wagenen in or whatever. So I guess they're almost like the mirror image of the Mariners right now in a way where it's like they were a pretty middling team, not as good as the Mariners last year, but like in the, you know, sort of 500-ish team, we can say, like, true talent-wise. And instead of going all in on a rebuild, they aggressively add pieces, but they're not as good as the Braves right now, and they're trying to trade Noah Syndergaard.
I don't know. The Mets are just always the Mets, right?
They really are. It seems like they're inescapably Mets.
I mean, the difference with, I think with what you're saying with Syndergaard and what you just said with the Mariners is that they could potentially get like a, if they can get like a Chris Sale level haul with Syndergaard.
Yeah, sure. I mean, theoretically, but why did they just trade for Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz then?
I never know why they do anything that they do.
Like, they're intent on competing, they should keep Syndergaard.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like, I believe we talked about it on a previous podcast at some point, but back when the Phillies traded for Roy Halladay and then immediately turned around and traded Cliff Lee away to like
it's
rebuild
like the
their
same
farm
thing.
System.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you don't, you can't serve two masters. Like if you're trying to win the World Series, you got to have Roy Halladay and Cliff Lee.
But it's like, they're saying like, oh, we have enough starting pitching.
Famous last
words. I know.
Jesus.
Like, but,
and you would think they would know from the shit mountain of injuries they've had over the last 2 years.
I don't understand it. But also, like, how aggressively were they trying to trade Syndergaard? Because there was that report that said Cubs are open to trading Chris Bryant, and what really Theo Epstein just said is that he didn't have anybody off the table.
Right.
It's like, I feel like I can't trust almost any of these things anymore.
That's true.
Like,
you never know.
Because, of course, like, there isn't an untouchable. I don't think there's a. Is there a single untouchable player trade wise, do you think?
What? In Major League Baseball?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Mike Trout.
I think the Angels would trade Mike Trout if it was a big enough haul.
They would absolutely not trade Mike Trout.
You don't think if it was like a real. I can't think if. I'm not as good at
unless
prospects.
It's like Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez that you're getting back. Like,
you don't think that they would trade him for like a minor league packet? I don't know. Prospects well enough. Let's say that it was the
if
the Nationals
Ronald
had
Acuna,
like
maybe
Strasburg,
or Juan Soto.
Yeah, something like that. Like a
maybe, but even then, I don't know. Like like face of the franchise. Like best
I think
player,
he's the I think he's the least
the
tradable
best
player, in the
player in Major League history.
I'm just saying that I don't think there's a single GM on the planet where there's a player where they're like, don't even bring up any, no matter how crazy trade, I will not entertain this. I don't think that exists.
You Darvish.
I think you're flipping the other way around. I don't think anybody's offering for Lou Darvish. Aaron Judge might be close.
Yeah, maybe.
Just because he's so cheap for so long.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know what the Mets are doing. I don't know what they're ever going to do. I don't think.
Here's the one caveat for shopping Noah Syndergaard is this dude, Brody. Used to be my bro Brody used to be Noah Syndergaard's agent. So if he has like some kind of inside intel,
that's the
like,
shady thing about this, right?
Yeah, actually his like UCL is partially torn. Like
that could be. That's a weird deal, man. It's a
very
weird deal to have someone who is just representing players on your team, and now he's your boss.
Yeah,
because that's like having your therapist become your boss. Like that sucks. Like they know an agent has to know everything about those players,
right?
Like bad shit that they need to know. Like a lawyer, it's like your lawyer becoming your boss. Like they have to know shit that like, so the agent knows to not let the teams know that stuff,
right? Yeah, and it was Syndergaard and DeGrom that he represented, and.
What
Cespedes? Did he have Cespedes too?
If he represented me, I would want off that team so fast. I wouldn't even want to mess with it. Even if you had a good relationship. I don't know, man. It feels weird. It feels weird to me.
I think probably everybody wants to get off the Mets regardless. So strange. But like they do like they have a good lineup. Like, assuming Cano is healthy and producing, Cespedes is healthy and producing, and like they have two good first base prospects, Dominic Smith and Peter Alonso. If one of them turns into a hitter, like plus like Conforto and Nimmo and like Todd Frazier, like that's a good lineup.
Yeah. And then they have the pitching.
Yeah. So it feels like they should be, I don't know. They need to make at least one more move. Like they need like to, like, I guess maybe add a catcher.
Get like Realmuto or something if they could.
Yeah. Or like Grandal. Like I feel like everybody could potentially be a fit for Grandal, or like, you know, maybe upgrade on Todd Frazier at third base or something. But like they, like, this isn't enough to convince me that the Mets are going to be anything but what they were last year, now but, featuring Robinson Cano.
Yeah, but man, like, is, I don't, like, I think the Braves are good, but I don't, I think that, I don't, I'm not convinced that the Braves are, like, going to be, like, a, like, I can see a situation where that's ends up being a, especially if the Nationals re-sign Harper, that's a four-team race. Because if the Braves regress a little and the Mets play a little above their head, and now we have like a four, and that's fun.
Yeah, I mean, that would
be
fun.
I can't count the Mets out, I don't think. I think they've put together a decent enough squad where I can't count them out, but it kind of feels like the Blue Jays like 2 years ago, right? Where it's like, oh.
Yeah, like a lot
without,
would have
like
to,
Donaldson. Yeah.
A lot would have to break right maybe for them. I mean, let's talk about the Braves because they have been maybe the one other team that's been pretty active so far in adding Josh Donaldson and Brian McCann. I mean, the Phillies added Segura, but so that...
Well, the Yankees added Paxton and...
That's true, yeah.
Didn't they get someone else?
They re-signed Brett Gardner and CeCe Sabathia.
Oh, yeah. Good for CeCe.
Well, and so the Braves added Donaldson for 1 year, which I really like. They added Brian McCann for a year, which I like as well. And it feels like they potentially, I think they're probably a favorite as it stands right now. If they add a pitcher, they'll definitely be a favorite.
Yeah.
But I guess it's too soon to say for the entire NL East, particularly because the Phillies are so rumored to be in on Machado and Harper, and they just added Segura while getting rid of...
Santana?
Yes, Carlos Santana getting rid of his contract and moving Hoskins to first. It'll be interesting. It feels like the Phillies, Braves, and Mets could all theoretically be better than last year. And then, the Nationals keep Harper, or even if they don't keep Harper, maybe they just have some positive regression from the guys who are still around, and they are in the hunt as well. But what do you think of the Braves getting Donaldson and McCann?
I think,
any feelings?
Yeah, Evan texted me and he was like, I'm so happy. And I immediately was like, congratulations on getting your washed up players. But they're 1 year deals. Like, I mean, like, it's almost impossible to ever get upset at a 1 year deal, I feel like, right? Like,
yeah, and I think Donaldson is like as much upside as you could ever possibly get in a 1 year deal.
I totally agree. And when he said that, I didn't realize that there were 1 year deals because I just like got a thing that said they acquire, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that, and I mean, McCann is like sentimental. I feel like he adds real value. I think from a Braves fan point of view, it means more to you to get McCann
of course,
back.
Yeah.
But I think that, it's a 1 year deal. Like what? Like it's better than when they signed Jose Bautista. I think you're high. Most people are higher on Donaldson than I am. I just like think he's, like I haven't seen him. He doesn't feel. I don't know when hasn't been good for so long. Like I need him to.
But
be
he
good.
Has been.
I know
he was very good in 2017.
Yeah,
and he was like fine in 2018, yeah. Except he was hurt.
But on 1 year deal, whatever. Even if he's like a 4-win player.
Yeah, 4-win like, player on a 1 year deal is huge.
Like a 3-win player is huge. So, and even if McCann's a 1.5-win player, he's a catcher.
Right.
He knows what he's doing. Like so. And if he can catch 130 games, like, there you go.
He's not going to catch that many games.
That's a lot of games.
I mean, he's going to be splitting time with Tyler Flowers. Like, they basically replaced Kurt Suzuki with Brian McCann. And those guys are the same age.
Yeah. Suzuki had such a good year last year.
Yeah, out of nowhere, but yeah.
McCann
could probably still hit if he's healthy.
I don't think like the Braves are like definitely better because of those moves, but they're not worse, obviously. And like they're going to be definitely better because they have young players that I think will still be good or be better. I think Albies second half Ozzie Albies was the Albies that we'll probably see.
Yeah, but here's why
he could be a little better, but I don't know, I think Acuña's good.
Yeah. You think? Here's why I think Donaldson is meaningful for them, because potentially they could be replacing Nick Markakis hitting cleanup with Josh Donaldson hitting cleanup.
Yes, potential is huge.
Yeah. So that's all.
Yeah.
But I like the Segura trade for the Phillies as well.
I think the Phillies are going to be better.
Yeah. So going back to the Mets where we started, I think, you know, like I said, they have to make more moves. They can't just be like, well, we did our big move of the offseason.
No, I think, yeah, I think that if they think those moves automatically puts them in contention with the, and I do, the Nationals, especially if they re-sign Harper, have to be better.
Yeah.
Like, even I'm not saying that they're going to be a 100-win team, but there's no way that they're going to be that bad again unless Scherzer's arm falls off. Like,
yeah. Yeah, they
must be better than that with
so
that
profoundly.
Roster. Yeah. And then they just got
Gomes
so
from
it's
the
like,
Indians.
And that was a real weak spot for them because it was Weeders, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't see them. I don't think I'm going to be picking the Mets to win that division if they don't make any more moves.
Yeah. Well, it's been an interesting offseason so far.
Yeah.
And I mean that in like kind of the truest definition of like, I'm very interested in all of these moves. They are not things that I would have seen coming, pretty much across the board.
You think the Rockies are going to do something weird?
Probably.
They usually do. Oh, I can't wait to see what the Rockies
do.
And
they may very well be this upcoming weekend because that is when the winter meetings start. And so hopefully we'll see more of the free agents start to come off the board. We've had a bunch of trades, but really kind of Donaldson is like the only major name in free agency to sign.
To sign. Yeah.
I mean, there's been rumors of stuff, but the only one who has found a landing spot. So
it feels like Machado or Harper have to go first, right? Isn't that the vibe?
Probably. I mean, that's usually how it goes, is the top of the market, you know, sets it for everybody else.
Because
it seems like he's limiting his kind of like process to like the Phillies and Yankees, and that's basically it. But yeah, so I always like the winter meetings. Hopefully we'll get some exciting news to come out of it.
Yeah.
With that, let's take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to be picking up our favorite and least favorite players for every franchise with the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Ooh.
We are back, and we're talking Diamondbacks.
Ooh.
The old D-backs. My hometown team, sort of. My team home state team from 2 hours where I grew up. I still remember when the Diamondbacks were announced.
Ooh.
I remember watching very early Diamondbacks games. I got a Diamondbacks hat for Christmas before they were even fielding a major league franchise. And I remember them winning the World Series, which was a very exciting thing for Arizonans at the time.
And only Arizonans, because that was the year everyone was cheering for New York, because it was the year of 9/11.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose that's true. I've never actually thought about it in those terms. Yeah, the 1 year people wouldn't like mind the Yankees winning.
I was cheering for the Diamondbacks. I still remember watching that game in my basement.
Yeah. It was a very exciting World Series.
Yeah, it was great.
Luis Gonzalez with the bloop single.
Yeah.
Off Mariano Rivera.
Yeah.
Yeah, so an interesting franchise that has had some highs and then also been mostly nondescript apart from that, really. I would say since those Johnson Schilling teams, Johnson Schilling Gonzalez teams, like, you know, they most years they have not been in the national consciousness.
Oh yeah, for sure. Even I think they've won probably a couple of divisions since then. But
yeah,
yeah, you're right.
Yeah, they won. They made the playoffs one year when it was sort of the team was built around Justin Upton when he was like a young guy, and then
it was Brandon Webb there then too. Or
yeah,
was that
I think so. I would think so. Yeah. And then obviously they've had a couple of good years with Paul Goldschmidt at the center of the team more recently. Potentially another team like the Mariners that is thinking of tearing it all down. And trading Paul Goldschmidt, which would be crazy to me.
Oh, man.
They should definitely just re-sign him and make him the face of the franchise type guy.
Oh, man, that would suck. Goldie.
So let's talk favorites and least favorites. Who is your favorite Diamondback ever?
It's almost Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah.
I love him.
I do love Paul Goldschmidt. One of the... Like, the heir to Jeff Bagwell, I think, as just, like, one of the few well-rounded first basemen.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But Mark Grace is my favorite.
You Cubs,
because I couldn't say him for the Cubs. I guess that's true. I don't think I did, but I love Mark Grace, and he's my favorite Diamondback.
Wait, you might have said him for the Cubs. I'm trying
to remember.
That's
what I was wondering, because if I said him, I had to say someone else.
Who else would you have said?
Rennie Johnson, of course.
No, for the Cubs, I mean.
Oh, Ryan Sandberg?
I think you might have said Mark Grace. I don't know. But you can pick him again if you... I won't.
Okay. Well, now I feel like...
No. That's fair.
Do I like Randy Johnson or Paul Goldschmidt better? Paul Goldschmidt's my choice if I've already said Mark Grace. So, a first baseman for the Diamondbacks. No, that's a total homer pick just because I love Mark Grace so much.
That's fair. A very important figure in Diamondbacks team history as well.
He scored either the tying or I think the tying run in that game.
I don't think
he scored the winning run, but he was on base. Anyway, he was involved in that final rally in Game 7. He was my favorite Cub growing up. I probably already said him. but Paul Goldschmidt, I do love him, and I think because he's the perfect. He fits that Jeff Bagwell, Jim Thome, only he's more athletic definitely than Jim Thome because Paul Goldschmidt steals bases, which I don't think anybody realizes until they see that he steals like 16 bases or whatever a year.
Yeah, I think he was a 30-30 guy like 2 years ago.
And he's number 44, which is my basketball number. And
lots of reasons to love Goldie.
Goldschmidt. I think he's my favorite. But I did like Randy Johnson when he played for the Diamondbacks because that was probably peak Randy, right?
I would say so, and I did. I picked Randy Johnson.
I'm naming a lot of players, I realized, to take one. Yeah, you picked Randy Johnson.
Sorry, I'm looking up. Yeah, Goldschmidt was 30-30 in 2016, which is crazy.
What was he this last year?
He only stole 7 bases this past year, but prior to that it was 21-32-18.
I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Randy Johnson is definitely my favorite Diamondback ever. I would say he's the face of the franchise. It's either him or Luis Gonzalez. Luis Gonzalez was there for longer, I believe, but
I think so.
Yeah, Randy Johnson, he was so dominant when he was with the Diamondbacks, and he was kind of the guy that made them interesting. Like, they were, you know, they signed him. At the time, I think it felt like it was out of nowhere.
It was their second season, I think.
It was before their second season, and he had just come off that like dominant half season with the Astros,
right?
And then he proceeded to win 4 Cy Young awards in a row and lead the team to the World Series
and threw a perfect game, won a World Series MVP.
Killed a bird out of midair.
Katie and I watch that clip probably once every 6 weeks. It's so bizarre.
So crazy.
Oh, man, I can't believe it. And do you know that he's a photographer now?
No,
like a professional photographer?
I didn't know that.
Check him out. Look him up, Randy Johnson stuff.
Maybe I will. I feel like he could still be pitching. Like, he had back issues, I think, but like, apart from that, like, I feel like he was just so nasty and like so gangly and weird and like had such pinpoint control ironically, after having just terrible control for...
Yeah, because he didn't get good until he was like 29, right?
Yeah.
What a weird deal.
Yeah. He did make one All-Star team at 26, but he sort of... even then, in the year he made the All-Star team, he led the majors in walks.
What was that? What year was it?
That was 1990.
So was he a Mariner by then?
Yes.
Okay. He was 26 in 1990.
Yes.
That's crazy.
And then, so that year he walked 120 people in 219 innings. The following year he walked 152 people,
ooh,
batters in 201 innings for, dang, a tidy walks per nine of 6.8. But then he's like just figured it out and locked it down.
Boy, did he ever figure it out. That's an understatement.
Yeah. And he won those four Cy Youngs in a row. And he should have won another one in 2004 at the age of 40.
Who beat him?
2004.
Carpenter? No, it was 2005.
I'm clicking right now.
I'm guessing,
but I remember
Greg,
he got fucking robbed.
Or
oh, it was
or
Clemens.
Oh, Clemens.
And Johnson was worth 8.5 wins, and Clemens was worth 5.5 wins, but Johnson only had 16 wins. That tells you how far we've come with the Jacob deGrom win, is that Johnson didn't win because he won. He went 16-14. And Clemens went like 20.
Oh, that, and also that year, that was the year that the Diamondbacks won like 50 games. He went 16-14 on like a,
yeah,
50,
exactly,
game winner.
And Clemens went 18-4. But anyway.
Was he an Astro then, I guess? Yeah.
Yes. But anyway, yeah, Randy Johnson was great. An all-timer.
He was.
And like one of the like all-time like weirdos of the game too. Like,
yeah,
you know? Just a beautiful guy that, like, a beautiful player to have on a essentially an expansion team, to give them personality and to give them star power and to give them, like, if it wasn't for Randy Johnson, the Diamondbacks and the Rays would be the same thing, basically.
I mean, the Diamondbacks might be worse
historically
off.
Yeah,
they might be like closer to the Marlins, or
yeah,
I guess the Marlins have won two World Series. That's
but
bad.
Like,
but
in,
yeah,
terms of sort of like general perception,
yeah,
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 especially with like the number of times that the Diamondbacks have tried to drastically slash payroll, like they've done essentially the Marlins sell-offs.
That's true.
With, but not to the same degree of like,
well, not,
public scrutiny,
yeah,
I guess.
But I don't think they've done it in a way quite like,
yeah, they, I mean, they haven't done it.
They haven't blown up a World Series winning team the way that, but, or two World Series winning teams. I mean, yeah, he put the Diamondbacks on the map for sure. It still feels so weird that he played for them.
Not to me.
You grew up with it, yeah. Not like, I mean, I grew up at Randy. I was young and, or I'm old enough to remember, like, to love Randy Johnson on the Mariners. You know, those teams. And then it was Randy Johnson on the Diamondbacks. It feels weirder to think of him as an Astro or a Yankee, for sure.
Yeah, I definitely... I mean, I remember him on the Mariners, too, but I define him as a Diamondback in my, yeah, mind.
Yeah, to me, he's always a Mariner first. But that doesn't even make any sense. Because he was a Mariner first. That doesn't make any sense, because his best years were definitely with the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, but I mean, he was great with the Mariners, yeah, too.
It's so crazy that he was so dominant and good that you don't even think about how good Curt Schilling was when he played for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
And Curt Schilling was really, really good with the Diamondbacks.
Curt Schilling was unbelievable. Like, more key to them winning that World Series, like, in those playoffs.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
he was unreal, yeah, in those playoffs. Part of it, you know,
well,
always
Johnson's
has to be
more likable.
Yeah,
Curt
Schilling is just like a shithead, but yeah, we didn't know that at the time.
We didn't know the extent of his shitheadedness. But Randy Johnson has always just been this like weird, goofy dude that has a weird voice, always had a weird haircut, is 6'10", looks like he does, killed a bird. Like, he just...
I would put Randy Johnson on my, like, pretty high up on my list of favorite players of all time, especially, like,
yeah,
non-White Sox of all time.
I think he would be high on my list of favorite players in my lifetime. I think,
yeah,
he would be I would feel pretty confident saying he'd be my top 25 for sure.
Yeah.
And probably much higher.
Yeah.
But he's maybe my favorite pitcher of my lifetime.
I think I like Maddux better.
Pedro was the only other one I was thinking of for me.
And Homer is a Mark Burley as well.
Oh, well, sure.
But, I mean, top five for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I never thought about it in terms, but he might be my favorite pitcher that I've grown up watching. I can't. Or maybe not, I mean, maybe not like peak favorite, but when I think back on just how many years of joy Randy Johnson gave me.
Yeah.
Would Maddux would be the only other one that would become close.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, I mean, Maddux, you didn't feel like Maddux isn't a kid's attraction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's not impressive in the same way.
He's your fan's fan. He's like way different than like seeing him carve up people on your 92-mile-per-hour fastballs that barely, you know, or like hitting the plate. Versus just a dude that's a lefty throwing as hard as he can.
Just like so gangly. Those like I do feel kind of lucky, I guess. But it's just kind of cool that I can say that I've seen Randy Johnson and Greg Maddux and Roger Clemens all pitch in person.
Oh, wow. Have I seen any of them, Greg?
I don't know.
I think I've seen Clemens.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I've seen Clemens when he was with the Red Sox the first time. Or the only time.
You saw him in his like prime. I saw him maybe in his last year with the Astros.
Maybe I saw him with the Blue Jays. Either saw him with the Red Sox or the Blue Jays against the Royals. I don't know if I ever saw Johnson. I wish I would have. I don't think I did. What was the K per nine that you were talking about? Or walks per nine that was so bad?
6.8.
Nolan Ryan only had 1 year that was higher than that. But Nolan Ryan had 1, 2, 3, 4 seasons in which his walks per nine were 6 or higher.
That's wild.
His career walks per nine was 4.7. He just walked so many dudes.
Yeah.
But Nolan Ryan had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 K per nine over 10.
Johnson had more than that.
Really?
But the game changed. I mean, Johnson from 1991 to 2002, he was up above 10 the entire
Dang.
Time. Then he dropped all the way down to 9.9 in 2003 and then back up over 10 in 2004.
Yeah, Nolan Ryan just had more. The one thing I like about Randy Johnson is he was nice enough not to break Nolan Ryan's single season record.
Yeah.
I think he came within like 5 or something. What's Randy Johnson's career high?
372.
Oh, okay. So 383 is Nolan Ryan's record. So he came within 11. I was sweating that season.
Yeah. Let's talk least favorite real quick.
All right.
Who is your least favorite?
So this is hard. This is hard because the Diamondbacks are so benign that it's hard to hate a Diamondback. But controversial choice here. You're not going to believe it. Zach Greinke.
Oh, I am surprised by that.
I love Zach Greinke. I'm tired of his bullshit.
Elaborate on that bullshit.
It's not even him. I'm tired of seeing Zach Greinke not live up to what he is supposed to be.
I feel like Zach Greinke's been pretty good for the Diamondbacks, actually.
I think he has been good for the Diamondbacks. But they traded for him, right? Or is that
no,
a
they
signing?
Signed
they
him
signed
for
him.
Like an outrageous contract.
They shouldn't have done that. Like, I don't know. Zach Greinke drives me so crazy, and he has since the Royals days. And I want him to go to a team that I don't like. I don't know.
I don't quite understand. So
if you're a Diamondbacks fan, do you think that the Zach Greinke signing has been a success?
I mean, he's made 2 All-Star teams, and they made the playoffs last year. Like,
but would you say it's because of Greinke, or would you say it's because of Corbin? You know, like what's going on with Greinke? Why isn't he a superstar? Is what I want to know.
Because he's 35 years old.
You think that's it?
Yeah,
he's never been a superstar. He kind of was. With the Brewers and his last season with the Royals.
You know, won a Cy Young, and he's made like five or six All-Star teams. He had that ERA under two with the Dodgers. Like, I would say that, like, Zach Greinke is one of the, like, five best pitchers in the majors over the last 10 years.
I'm not even necessarily disagreeing with you. I'm tired of thinking about Zach Greinke so much because he's not...
I think it sounds like you're just scarred from, like, the early years when he, like, struggled so badly.
I'm not scarred by that. I'm happy he got over these mental issues and that he was well. I'm not bitter that he left.
No. I'm not saying bitter. I'm just saying, like, the hope of what Zach Greinke was going to become for the Royals did not come to pass. And so you sort of, like, have these like, shadows.
Maybe that's what it is. I know Zach Greinke's been good, and I think he's been underrated, and I'll never not like Zach Greinke. In fact, the Royals aren't on his no trade list.
Oh yeah.
And he has that 15 team no trade list. The Royals inexplicably aren't on it, which like gives me this like tiny bit of hope that he'll come home someday. I think I'm just tired of spending any energy hoping that Zach Greinke is going to be Max Scherzer.
Gotcha. And he's not Max Scherzer.
He's not,
right,
and he's never been Max Scherzer. Even if he's been as good as Max Scherzer has been maybe a couple of seasons, which he may have been.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, strictly speaking numbers-wise, but he, for a while, that Dodgers year with the Brewers, he might have been in that conversation. But I just don't like every year thinking about how Zach Greinke isn't fulfilling what I want him
to be. Right, yeah. he maybe... His highs have been very high, but he hasn't hit them quite as often as maybe he could have been hoped to.
He's one of those players, I wish I could think of a parallel right now, that you want on your team and you're happy he's on the team, but you if you're a Diamondbacks fan, you have to have this separation from Zach Greinke. You have to have this, like, he can't be my guy. I guarantee there's not a single Diamondbacks fan out there that's like, Zach Greinke's 100% my dude.
Yeah.
Like, there's probably a huge Zach Greinke fan, but he just, you always have to be like prepared for him to let you down.
Yeah. Well, I think
it's not even his fault because usually it's just injuries.
Yeah.
Or his brain.
I think that's interesting to me. I mean, I like Zach Greinke. I think he's like an interesting dude. I think like he's like weird and kind of like funny in like a very dry way. He's obviously like, you know, he's different than your prototypical ace starter. He's as different from your prototypical like pitcher personality wise as like a Max Scherzer is, right?
Yeah, or like Joey Votto.
Yeah, like in a much different direction. Yeah. I do think like his Diamondbacks career has been like a little bit weird just because the Diamondbacks are a little bit weird.
I don't dislike. This is a situation where it's like, this is a player, because I couldn't think of a Diamondback I straight up just didn't like. So I don't like Zach Greinke, the Diamondback.
Yeah.
I love Zach Greinke.
That's fair.
That's where this comes from.
It's interesting. I that's an interesting way to think about it. My least favorite Diamondback is a deep cut Diamondback by the name of Travis Lee. Do you remember Travis Lee?
Of course I remember Travis Lee.
Okay, well, I don't know.
No, I know. Yeah, I don't know why you would. That, but I definitely
he's like
Travis
the
Lee.
Original Diamondback. Like, he was their first draft pick ever. No, he wasn't their first draft pick. They traded for him. I'm trying to remember exactly. But, like,
he was, like, supposed to be, like, their first homegrown guy, because he debuted them.
Okay, here's what happened. He was drafted second overall by the Twins, and then he, like, something about his contract was, like, not... It, like, violated the collective bargaining agreement or something like
that?
They
failed to tender him a contract within 15 days of the end of the draft.
Yeah.
So then they lost the rights to him, and then the Diamondbacks signed him.
Yeah. So
I don't remember that.
Even before
that
the Diamondbacks were able to draft, I believe, they signed Travis Lee, who was like this huge amateur prospect. And it was like, they were like, this is the guy that we're like building our franchise around. He was the only Diamondback for a time. And so he was like very heavily hyped up.
Yeah, he signed with the Diamondbacks in 1996.
That was like the year that they were announced.
Yeah, because
like
98 was their
first. Yeah, they didn't participate in the draft that year. Like, he was like the first Diamondback. Because they offered him a shitload of money.
$4-year, $10 million. $2.5 million a year. That's pretty good.
And like, for an amateur at the time, yeah. I'm pretty sure it was like a record-breaking contract. And so there was like all this hype around him. I had like his baseball card before the Diamondbacks had played a game.
Yeah.
Like, he was the guy in all their like promo photos, like modeling their uniforms.
He hit a home
like
run
that.
In their first game.
Yeah,
he
was.
I remember watching.
He was like supposed to be like the guy who was going to lead the franchise. And then he ended up being a pretty mediocre first baseman. And it was just like, for a kid having that like kind of build up and then just being like, oh wait, this guy like sucks kind of like,
yeah.
I mean, he did end up being a key piece in the trade that got Curt Schilling. So I suppose like that worked out well enough for the Diamondbacks and that they won a World Series. But yeah, just, I think the talk about not meeting expectations, you know, Travis Lee is the, perfect example of that.
That's good. He was drafted second overall by the Twins behind Chris Benson.
Oh wow. Gosh.
This draft was a true shit show. I'm looking at right now. Adam Eaton was in that draft.
The pitcher.
Eric Chavez is 10th.
That's a pretty
this
good pick.
R.A. Dickey. All right. Yeah, this is Gilmesh. Look at this. This is a true shit show of a first round of a draft. Are all of them like this? We got to go through and look at drafts someday.
Yeah.
That would be fun. Grade some drafts.
Oh, absolutely.
We also
like
got to do
grades.
We also got to do our expansion draft, remember?
Oh, yeah.
We're starting an expansion team.
We'll do it. That'll be like a January idea.
Yeah,
when
because
we're...
we have to decide which players are protected.
Yeah, that's going to take some investment. We'll have to assign, like, you can do the NL and I'll do the AL or something like that. But anyway.
Yeah, let's hash this great production meeting.
So I think, I agree. There weren't, like, I don't even hate Travis Lee. Like,
I just think he was
a disappointment. There's some other guys I thought about. Wasn't a big fan of Matt Williams when he was on the Diamondbacks.
No, I thought about him. Steven Drew,
I gave some thought to. Tony Womack was not very good. No. Willie Bloomquist was not very good.
I always
kind of
liked Tony Womack.
I
mean, I thought about doing Kim, Young Kim.
For blowing.
Yeah. I mean, he big time blew two. Blew two games, didn't he? Five?
Yeah.
No,
like
not
that.
Six. 4-5.
Because
six was the blowout by the Diamondbacks. They won like 14-1 or something.
I don't remember. You know, I don't remember shit about World Series. I couldn't even tell you, like, what was it, game four that went 16 innings? This year?
Oh yeah, what was that game?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. I bet I know more about the 2001 World Series than the 2016 World Series of the Cubs one, because those like memories when you're a kid stick with you so much.
Yeah,
I have such a hard time keeping facts straight about the 2016 World Series.
Yeah,
should be burned into my brain.
Yeah. We'll be back later this off season with more episodes talking about the major transactions, and maybe we'll get to that expansion draft. That'll be fun.
That'll be fun.
In the meantime, always appreciate reviews. Make sure to subscribe. Thanks to Boardwalk Audio and Off the Bench once again. Thanks to Moonbounce for the transition music. And we will talk to you guys later when there's more baseball to talk about.
Boardwalk Audio Podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.